This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, September 26, 2011.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third meeting of the fall semester of 2011 of the GPSA, September 26, 5:30, Malott Hall, Bach Auditorium. Thanks for coming. I know some of you still don't have food. That's wonderful. Feel free to, wonderful that you're still waiting to get food is what I meant. Feel free to still continue to do that. We have a busy agenda, so we thought it was a good idea to get started. Very quickly, just a roll call of the voting members. Randa Adra, absent. Kyle Albert.
Here.
Brian Alkemeyer.
Here.
Steve Anand.
Here.
Nicole Baran.
Here.
YJ Chen.
Here.
John C.
Here.
Sorry, I'll work on it. Evan Cortens, here. Carl Furkenhoff.
Here.
Marquise Hawkins.
Here.
Yevgeny Israelit.
Here.
James Keach.
Here.
Allison Nash.
Here.
Joe Pacelli.
Here.
Rebecca Robbins.
Here.
Eric Smith.
Here.
Mia Tutil.
Here.
Michelle White.
Here.
Crystal Wilson. Absent. First item on the agenda, I would like to welcome Barb Newth, Vice Provost and Dean of the Graduate School. Dean Newth.
Alternatives.
We do believe that the Big Red Barn, the Graduate and Professional Student Center, provides some elements of Austin graduate community. The Big Red Barn has a number of issues associated with it. It's an old structure, it needs maintenance. So we've been having an ongoing discussion with Cornell Facilities about putting the resources in that to make sure that the Big Red Barn stays standing, stays operational, and we can do whatever improvements are possible to that. And Facilities is on board with us in terms of advocating for the Big Red Barn to be a continuing priority. So hopefully that will continue to be available. Also, Brenda, which many of you know, through the Office of Graduate Student Life, Brenda is the Assistant Dean for Student Life, has been working very hard on the notion of a virtual graduate community presence through our new website. We have resources that are available on that website that foster more communication, that foster more awareness of programs that are going on, and can help provide an entree, if you will, to the resources and systems that may be available for graduate students. Recognizing, and I fully recognize that a virtual community-like presence is not nearly as effective as an actual building, but we do have to work within constraints. The other piece that was part of that facilities issue was trying to ensure that the GPSA leadership would have space available. So I'm pleased that you now have this room to meet in. GPSA also knows that it can have space within Caldwell, within the Office of Graduate Student Life if needed. And my understanding is that there have been discussions with the Dean of Students for space in Willard Trade Hall. So I'm hopeful that continues, if that would be useful to GPSA. And if I can help leverage that in any way, I'm happy to do that. Another goal of the Graduate Community Initiative that relates to this notion of driving a professional student identity on campus focused on mental health and general well-being. So there was a student advocacy committee, GPSA, as you all know, that worked with a number of mental health professionals across campus. But perhaps more importantly, I think, is the notion that that the University Mental Health Committee has now been institutionalized with what I understand to be three student representatives to that mental health committee. And so having a presence from the graduate student body within that group, I think is a move. The child service mentioned as well in the sense of mental health and supporting the work-life balance of students. This year we made an effort to increase the eligibility limit for graduate students so that child care availability or child care grant would be available even to families where there are two graduate students, but we didn't want to price two graduate students living on assistantship out of the child care grant eligibility, so we made that change. And we're also attempting to increase the amount of the grant by about 6% per year, which is about the rate of increase of child care costs. So we're making some progress there. There were a number of GCI goals that provide increased career services for graduate and professional students. Things like improving academic career resources, workshops on how to give job talks, how to write grant applications, giving papers, and similar topics. So I'll say a little bit more about that when I talk about the three new positions that we've just filled or are in the process of filling. There was also a comment in the GCI about improving graduate housing. Since the time of the GCI, Hasbrook, and I believe Thurston Court has then returned to graduate student housing. You might remember that Hasbrook was at one point part undergraduate housing temporarily, and so now that's back to graduate student housing. And as well, there's an effort underway that Vice President Susan Murphy is leading to think about the world post-Maplewood, meaning that we recognize that Maplewood is probably long past its useful life, and so we're trying to develop a strategy once the university is in a position to take on more debt, to develop a strategy that would allow us to finance the rebuilding of the Maplewood area. So it's certainly on our agenda, but again, large financial implications for that, so we're thinking about that. So let me focus the rest of my comments on the three new positions that I'm really, really very enthused about. We have two new deans in the graduate school. Dr. Sherry Nataro is the Associate Dean for Inclusion and Professional Development. She started August 19th. She comes to us from Washington University, having spent about 10 years there as a dean in that graduate school. And Dr. Tillman Baumstark comes to us as an assistant dean for professional development. He started about a week ago. He comes to us from a tenured life sciences professor position at the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia. And he's relocating to the Ithaca area. And we're very, very pleased to be able to utilize his talents and his enthusiasm. And then the third position is actually a half a position. The graduate school is funding a 0.5 FTE and half FTE in career services that will be located in central career services. The other half will focus on international, the needs of international students for internship, figuring out the job market internationally. But the half that is focused on graduate students is really designed to support master's students and particularly PhD students in the humanities and humanistic social sciences who are not going to be going into or seeking to go into academic careers. We know that the colleges across the university are supporting students in other ways, but a real gap that we identified was particularly for those PhD students in those areas not seeking academic careers. So the Associate Dean for Inclusion and Professional Development, Dr. Sherry Nataro, her focus is primarily but not exclusively on students from groups historically underrepresented in graduate education. Her role is to work with the graduate field in supporting recruitment, so recruitment strategies, and supporting retention, professional development, and academic success for a completion for these students. So she'll have a number of responsibilities on her plate, including recruitment with regard to the university's diversity goal, working on establishing pathway relationships with programs that engage undergraduate students in exploring what graduate education is all about, and also in developing pathway relationships with certain schools where it seems like it would be a good opportunity to have those relationships towards recruitment goals. She'll be working on assumption and accountability in relationship to the university's diversity goals. Working with fields so that they can understand best practices in terms of recruiting and holding fields accountable with my help to try and be addressing those issues. She'll also serve as liaison with graduate student organizations that are particularly focused on working with students from historically from groups that are historically underrepresented in graduate education. And she's been already, even though she's been here about a month, she's been in touch with the leadership of those groups and has been developing some programs with them. Dr. Tillman Baumstark, who is the Assistant Dean for Professional Development, will be working on a number of areas. One of the areas that we'll be working on very strongly is the notion of professional development around transferable skills. So these are skills that help graduate students, help you all in terms of succeeding in and completing your graduate program, but are also transferable to either the postgraduate academic world or the postgraduate non-academic career world. So things like grant writing skills, public speaking, research ethics and integrity, reviewing manuscripts, dissertation writing, a variety of support programs. In addition, we expect that he'll be working in partnership with Alumni Affairs and Development and Career Services in trying to develop more opportunities for networking of current graduate students with alumni, with graduate student alumni from Cornell University to help identify what those opportunities are in terms of career development. working on leadership development. He'll also be working, his own background is international in the sense that that much of his graduate training was in Europe, and then he came to the United States for his postdoctoral experience and certainly many years as a faculty member. So the intention is for him to be working in partnership with the International Student Scholars Office on issues of international students coming to understand the academic culture in the United States, and as well domestic students seeking to have international experiences and understanding the international culture into which they might be moving. And then the last position is that half SEE career services position. And as I said, that person will serve as an advising specialist on jobs and careers, particularly for PhD students seeking non-academic careers, internships, providing one-on-one counseling, one-on-one advising, walk-in appointments, as well as workshops on the various skill sets that will be helpful. This person will also help coordinate the graduate career services group across the campus so that we have good communication across the campus about what the resources are. Also work on developing relationships with key employers who may be interested in recruiting or setting up internships for graduate students and not just undergraduate students. So with all of these, we're hoping that these three positions that are focused on professional development will go a long way to address some of the ideas that were brought up in the Graduate Community Initiative with regard to the graduate community, to leadership development skills, professional development skills, career services, alumni networking, that host of needs that was identified through GCI. So let me stop there and ask if you want to open this up for questions or how you'd like to handle this.
So as you know, a couple of people did send me some questions in advance. I sent these, they're one of them especially is very long. I sent it to Dean Newth in advance, so you've already seen it, but I'll sort of read a rough summary of just the three key points. So this is a particular graduate student who talks about the similar responsibilities but differing benefits between some types of employment positions versus graduate students. And this student asked three questions. How does the university justify the employment distinction between senior graduate students and technicians with similar educational opportunities and professional responsibilities? Second, do you think the graduate and professional student community can work productively with the university to change the status quo? And finally, what advice would you give to the GPSA or individual grad students for most effectively working with the university to improve the situation so that senior grad students are treated as professionals by Cornell and the cost to advisors might be lessened after the A exam is completed and students are finished with coursework?
So some of the preamble to that question was drawing parallels between a research technician, so paid full-time research technician, and graduate students, and what some of the differences are, and why a research technician has the benefits that a research technician does and a graduate student doesn't. Fair characterization.
Yeah.
So with regard to all those questions, let me just take the second one first, which was something along the lines of can GPSA and the university work to change the status quo? So I would pose that that absolutely we can work to analyze the status quo and to analyze what it is that are identified as concerns, and then identify whether change is needed, and if so, what type of change. I think what I would encourage you to all think about in terms of this notion of is a research technician similar to what a graduate student is doing, that there are a host of differences between those kinds of positions. A graduate student is there to develop academically, hopefully you're learning the entire time that you're here. And so part of the thinking is that as an apprentice, if you will, there are elements of learning that are going on or that should be going on throughout their time here at Cornell that may not be the case for a research technician who's handed a set of duties and that's that. The other piece is to think through some of the differences in how the different positions are structured. There's a degree of freedom the graduate students have, both intellectually in terms of developing what you're doing as research, moving forward with different research ideas that a research technician doesn't have. There's the clocking in and out on a time clock that a research technician has that most graduate students don't have. Would that be a positive thing? Would it not be? There are very defined days away, vacation time for research technicians, not so for graduate students. Maybe that's a good thing, maybe not so. There are other issues. If we were to take the amount of hours that, for example, a teaching assistant is expected to spend as a teaching assistant and parse that out extrapolate that dollars that you're getting in a teaching assistantship out to a full-time position, that full-time position would be at a wage rate that the university would just not pay. It would be in a much more expensive than a 40-hour a week research technician. So what do we think through when we think about the differences between the experiences of a graduate student, which is highly oriented towards academic development and your skill set and constantly learning, versus a research technician position, which is a fairly, in many cases, very confined and limited set of responsibilities. So yes, I think we could have that conversation. I love to be talking with a group about what your concerns are with regard to that, and really thinking through what are the implications of that. It may be that there are certain elements of in that question. There was also embedded a list of what employees are eligible for that graduate students aren't. There's also a list that wasn't included in that email of things that graduate students are eligible for that staff don't get. So one of the things that was mentioned that we're actually looking into is the notion of staff being eligible for financial planning assistance. And so we've had conversations with human resources about this, and actually human resources contract out with the vendor to bring those workshops into staff at Cornell University. So we're in the process of getting information on that. And if that's something that would be of use to graduate students, that's something that we could consider as part of our professional development budget, would be bringing in those same vendors, but to talk with graduate students about how to develop financial plans and how to think about that. There are also vendors who handle very, very portable retirement plans, which I would strongly encourage if you're concerned about retirement plans, think about that, because hopefully you're not going to be here until time of retirement. And staff are. And so thinking about what might be a retirement plan that you can begin to take with you. So that's, again, something that we'd be happy to explore, looking at vendors who provide those kinds of services and making that available. So those are the kinds of issues that if you help us understand a little bit more what's underlying those concerns, we'll do our best to try to work with you to look into those.
So there was another question, but I think I'll take a question from the floor first and come back to that later if we have time. Are there any questions for Dean New? Brian?
Are there any possibilities for, it seems like a lot of professional development concerns would be department specific, and I wonder if there's any possibility of developing positions within existing departments that would specialize in those kinds of issues for their field.
Not from the graduate school budget. There's 100, close to 100 graduate schools, so we're not able to do it at that level. What we're doing with our current new staff who came in, they're developing a process to do a needs assessment, looking at focus groups and reports that have been done over the past few years, but also they'll be developing a process to gain student input and to gain input from directors and graduate studies. So where I think that the graduate school can be helpful is in terms of directly providing workshops and activities for students, but as you say, some needs to be very specific to the field or to a combination field. So the other thing that I think graduate schools can do, rather than providing workshops directly, is to help the field understand what best practices are. And so what we're in the process of doing is to be thinking through how can we collect and identify best practices across the field and then communicate those. Because there are clearly some fields at Cornell that do a great job on some elements of professional development and other fields that really are falling short. So part of it may be your resource question. Part of it may be, however, just not really knowing what goes on. The other piece that where graduate school can be helpful, I think, is helping encourage and facilitate fields working together. So some fields that are rather small might be able to pair up or partner up with larger fields where there's a faculty panel or where there's activities going on that are pertinent to that subject area. So we're thinking through what we can do, but we just wouldn't have the resources to put a lot of staff out there across the university.
So the second question I had here is, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Jumping off of that, I was just wondering if there might be any opportunities with the new position coming in for graduate students to have some way of working with the process. I know that you mentioned surveying and that sort of thing, but more directly hands-on.
So, Nicole, would you like to mention what you did?
So I had sent out an email to the GPSA members sort of asking for just sort of a list of names who's interested in working with the graduate school, and then I forwarded those on. If you're interested, I can take your information and forward it to you guys, I guess, if that's...
I was also just thinking of forwarding on for partners, because maybe I'm not interested, but there might be somebody...
That's fine with me.
Yeah, so
yeah.
What I would caution, at this point... One of our staff is 1 week old, the other is 1 month old. So let's give them a little bit of time to figure out the process that they want to use in engaging and working with graduate students. So Nicole's been great in terms of identifying GPSA folks who have identified themselves as contact people or someone to share. But I'm a little bit hesitant just to send out a broadcast note, hey, anybody who cares about professional development and all these people, because I think it would be more effective for Sherry and Tillman to be able to propose, these are the different ways that that we would like to engage with students, or these are the opportunities, and in addition to that, we'd like to hear from you how you would like to engage with us. So let me give a little bit of thought first to different structures and opportunities so that we have something solid to offer to students who say, we want to work in this area.
So I guess what I was wondering if there was, I haven't actually directly asked anybody from my department what they would think would be a great workshop for our department. So
okay.
Do you not want us to reach out and try to do that sort of thing?
I think that Sherry and Tillman are going to be giving some thought to how can they get input from students. And so my concern is that they think that it might be good to have a set of questions that will be a bit more organized and focused on professional development so that we can see what students think about leadership development, communication skills, you know, whatever it might be. If we have 100 different GPSA folks sending 100 different notes out, then we'll come back with a mismatch of information. So, we absolutely want input from students, but I'm just a little bit concerned about the value of each one of you asking your students just a general comment with professional development.
I don't think that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe you and I can talk separately with that. Maybe you can figure it out.
Wonder if there are other questions? No other questions? I, of course, do have one more in front of me, but I can always follow up with you later. Not seeing any other questions. The question I have in front of me says that a recurring issue for the graduate student population here at Cornell is the discussion of unionization. Some community members would argue that the position of advocating for graduate student needs should not be filled by volunteers, which the GPSA is currently composed of, but by paid staff members or union officials. To avoid the possibility of unionization and in recognition of what the administration is actually gaining from maintaining a graduate and professional student assembly on campus that serves as an open and responsive pseudo-union, for a constituency that is both paid by and pays tuition to Cornell University, is the administration open to beginning discussions about establishing compensation or fellowships that are tied directly to service of or in the GPSA? Not my question.
My response to that is having served on a body similar to the GPSA in both of my graduate degree programs, I gained a lot through that experience. A lot of skill sets, a lot of opportunity, a lot of networking, but particularly a lot of hands-on experience. I also felt that the students whom I was representing in those bodies viewed me as a peer and viewed me as one of them. And so I'd be a bit concerned about turning these into paid positions and turning these into positions that might be attracting people to have them for different reasons than currently exist. So again, I'm willing to have a more detailed discussion, but that's my first reaction, that I'm not sure that would be a positive move overall.
Okay, thank you. Unless there's one more quick question, maybe. Sorry that so many of you were sitting behind me. Kyle?
There was an article in the Sun last week about how the economics department has grown to incorporate a lot of the different economists on campus, and that I know that part of the strategic plan was to look into ways that we could find more opportunity for efficiency and consolidation and streamlining in the social science program. I was wondering if there's been any other progress on that front, if there's been any other, if you have any other information to report about.
With other social science programs?
Yeah.
I know, and I wasn't at the meeting, but I know that there was some discussion at the most recent, I believe, faculty senate meeting about discussion of a process to examine the pros and cons of a school of public policy or some entity focused on public policy. That, to my knowledge, is the other major initiative in the theme of the social sciences. And again, I believe that the process is just getting started and there's dialogue about who should be involved, how to seek input, and those kinds of issues. I believe that Vice Provost Hans Sieber is heading that up. So if GPSA as an entity is interested in hearing more about that, you might contact him and identify where that is in the process and if there's an opportunity for GPSA to have any involvement.
So seeing that we've now reached our allotted 30 minutes, thank you very much, Dean Newton. The next item of business is the approval of the minutes from September 12, 2011. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, is there any objection to the approval of the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are hereby approved. That was easy. On to officer reports and committee updates. The first report is from your executive committee. We just wanted to let you know that the initial round of staffing is now complete. Our internal committees are looking very good. There are still spots on several of them. If you have further interest, of course, talk to the chair. But there are a couple of vacancies on university committees that are external to us, that we wanted to highlight. The UA Codes and Judicial Committee, one spot. Campus Welfare, one spot. The Grad School Academic Integrity Committee, we need four people, one per division. The University Diversity Council, the Student Union Board, that's the board that does things like allocate space in Willard Strait Hall. I know there was concern, for instance, last year about the ceramic studio. That's the board that makes those decisions. We also need liaisons to the employee and student assemblies. The employee assembly only meets roughly monthly, sometimes biweekly, but the last two meetings have been canceled I don't know, either biweekly or monthly, depending on whether or not they have the meeting. The student assembly always meets every single week. So if the GPSA is too slow paced for you, you can also attend another meeting every single week and be our liaison to the student assembly. The full list of committees is up at our handy-dandy, easy-to-remember URL, committees.cornellgpsa.com. There's a list of all the vacancies, including many that are not listed here. We're still actively recruiting. Anything else? Appropriations Committee, Chris.
So, our committee met on Saturday. We looked over the bottom line funding applications that we received early end of September. If we were to approve and we'll recommend and approve all of the funding requests, the activity fee would stand at around $86 and some change. That is up from $78, which it is right now. 10% is what?
76,
sorry. So that's over a 10% increase, and usually we see somewhere between 0 and 10% increases. So we are going to probably be a little bit more parsimonious with what you recommend. But that is the only update that I have on that right now. Well, besides that, we'll be meeting with those groups next week at some point when they give us their schedules, and we'll be asking questions. And you'll be talking with them soon, by the end of the month. By the end of October, maybe we will be meeting them if you continue coming to meetings. The last update that I have is there was some discrepancies about the budget last time, just letting you know that the budget that was approved is valid, but so many issues about how much was spent in each category and everything are still being worked out. I will get another update as soon as we have all the information on that worked out, but that is probably going to be more than a few months work. That you have to go back and look through sort of accounting that's been done potentially 2 years, 3 years back. But now it's been checked out for the past 3 years. So anyway, any questions? Do you happen to take them after me?
Thanks, Chris. Next, communications, Steve Ahn.
Hey, not too much in terms of updates, but I did meet with Elizabeth from the graduate school in charge of communications there. Basically just trying to brainstorm ways we can sort of minimize overlap and complement each other and try to communicate social events, also academic news to the graduate community. And plan to have our first meeting sometime in the next 2 weeks, and we'll trend it also at that meeting. So basically, overall theme, trying to see how we can work with the administration for improved communication.
Let the record show that Brenda hasn't responded to the doodle poll. Next, Finance Commission, Nia.
Hi, quick reminder that this Friday, September 30th, is the deadline for funding request. That will be prepared by my committee next week on Tuesday at 5 p.m. If you're putting in an appeal or a special project, your services form can be found on the GPSA actually website. If you're putting in a late annual budget, then that's done online.
Thanks, Mia. Next, student advocacy, Rebecca. You have a slide.
Okay, so exciting news. Our main goal for this semester is to really set a model. We're going to have several issue focus events where we identify issues that are pertaining to a wide portion of graduate professional students, and then have a issue development discussion, ideally over dinner, and perhaps at the Big Red Barn or elsewhere. So the first one will be in October or November. We've identified students is the first issue that we want to target. So issues of wellness, well-being, and mental health. We're going to have a panel discussion of the two different folks from campus and administrators and things like that, representatives from various areas, and then break out for dinner and then collect back your table and have a discussion about the issue. So if you're interested, please send me an email. My email is not up there, rfar38@cornell.edu. If you're interested in volunteering or being involved, this is kind of a project of the student advocacy committee, but if you want to volunteer to lead more discussions, forget all about that.
Thanks, Rebecca. Graduate Professional Student Programming Board, YJ.
Okay. So, a tentative outline of our events for the semester. We'll have monthly grad night out. Next one is this Thursday at Bandwagon. We have wonderful drink special. We're going to make it start at 9 p.m. More info is on the Facebook page. And also, there's an event posting on the Cornell calendar. And there are two inter-school mixes of the semester plan. One is October 13th. It'll be between the science circle and the arts quad, basically. And I hope that all of you, the field reps can let their fields know about this happening. It is still open to everybody, although we are some more targets. We're targeting, and these were great fun last year, so I hope everyone can make it. There'll also be a zombie pub crawl a weekday before Halloween. There are further events in the pipeline. We'll decide which of these are happening this semester. The things that are not happening this semester will be happening next semester, and this will be decided at our second board meeting, which will happen next week, October 6th, Thursday, from 7 to 8 p.m. All our future meetings will be on alternating Thursdays, 7 to 8 p.m. Locations will be determined. I will put this on the GPSA.com, or CornellGPSA.com calendar, and also at our next meeting, I will let you know. We will have a presentation, so you can all attend this if you have an interest. We need one-time volunteers for event logistics. Often, the next one we need people at is October 15th, inter-school mixer, where we need people at the door and people help with specs and cleanup. So, if you're interested, please contact Nick, who's sitting right there, his email is there, or me, and you can be the first.
Thank you, YJ. Next, we move to a presentation from the 2010-2011 Ad Hoc Survey Committee. So this is an ad hoc from last year. If you give me a second to bring up a different PowerPoint. Now I'd like to recognize Mike Jenkin to speak on behalf of the committee.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Jenkin. I want to first recognize the other committee members without whom this effort would not have been possible. Stephen Ann, Christopher Clark, Evan Cordens, ubiquitous Evan Cordens. And Trace Phillip, who's not here at the moment. Let me begin by way of background. The ad hoc committee was authorized by Resolution 2, and the purpose of it was to try to gain a more scientific understanding, more empirical understanding, in terms of allocating student activity fee funds. And to look at the actual use by students of the services that are provisioned by the activity fee. To this end, the committee has randomly sampled 1,000 graduate and professional students, and we've administered a survey using the Survey Research Institute. We had a very healthy response rate, 65%. It's probably one of the best response rates out of any campus survey. They usually range in the 40s, and this is really kind of a marvelous response rate, so you can really have confidence in the data. And the data was collected by, again, the professional body called the Survey Research Institute. Okay? So let me begin by the overview, since you've probably all been emailed a preliminary report that identifies or looks at usage of particular groups, so particular sorts of entities that are funded by the student activity fee. In this secondary part, what I want to do is to look at, to present two pieces of information. One is kind of the demographics of the people that we've selected, so you get a better sense of how representative these students are. And two, to look at three domains. And this is really, I think, kind of an interesting innovation from the for the survey. What we looked at is the following. We asked ourselves, well, you know, if we were to evaluate the survey, if somebody was to say, you know, maybe this is a waste of money, what does it really do? What does the student activity fee actually accomplish? So it's, you know, I'm a social scientist, and you know, I try to think in terms of concrete measures, in terms of things we can actually identify. And the three things we considered are the following. Personal well-being, which is kind of how happy do you feel? Does attending these events increase your sort of overall happiness? If you go to the concert commission, if there's a good Red Barn, if all these things are happen, you know, are present, and you actually consume these services, you become more happy as a result. The second measure looks at the sense of community. You know, perhaps what we need to do, perhaps one of the functions that the that having the student activity fee is simply to create a sense of community among graduate students, to have people feel like they're belonging to a unified kind of unified entity, if you will. And there's actually a measure that in the social science literature that looks at this very issue. Kind of awkward to speak in the room, but sorry for facing that with you guys.
You can stand up closer if you like.
Yeah. So the the third point. So the third element has to do with kind of a more sociological, I guess they're all sociological in some sense, but really sociological measure in terms of mixed communities, right? You know, people have often remarked that one of the things that one of the problems with graduate student life is people sort of stick to their own interests and their own cliques. You go to the Red Barn and you see, you know, the peers, or biological scientists, or things to deal with biological scientists. And in fact, I've been told that not only do the department cliques replicate themselves, the university cliques replicate themselves as well. So they can kind of literally apply to the basic science, literally apply to the social sciences. There's some exceptions to this, no doubt, but there is sort of this trend. So one question I want to ask is, perhaps attending these events, you're going to be joining people with very different interests, and therefore you're connecting people that otherwise would not be connected. So if you go to a concert commission, you take people from all kinds of departments, all the departments that have an interest in concerts, and you're putting them together, perhaps, and they form ties in that way. And so the question was, what effect of attending these events have on these communities? So let me begin, of course, you know, I'll caution later associated with my days, we'll get to that later on. Let me kind of begin by identifying the demographics of the population. This is roughly, you know, one of the, this is roughly representative of the Cornell student population. It's also, you know, we have data on the non-respondents, right? So 55% of people responded. And we also had data from the registrar on the characteristics of the 35% that did not respond. So we can actually compare the population and see how well our samples meet. And there's a few exceptions, largely a fairly matched representative sample. The race variable, the CNR issue on it is I chose not to respond, so there's actually a large trend of people choose not to answer the race question. That's not what the guidelines say. So we miss each other, we can choose to go on. So a large number of people are so large number of people are so large number of people. And so the other kind of element is to look at the academic characteristics of these students. And here we have the four main schools, the three most graduate students, disciplines, the time of Cornell was about 2 years, and most of the survey respondents completed their KPAC program, which is So the activity level, as you could, so there's about 60% of the different activity events, and the mean is about, I mean, it's like math of the survey.
So the mean is about four events, and about five classes. The bulk of people are attending between one and ten events, and then females.
That's the
event. The first thing we looked at is the activity level and the life satisfaction. So the question is really, how satisfied are you with your life? The good news is, it seems like everybody is above average, so this is more or less happy. People are, we did have some people who were very unsatisfied, a few very unhappy members. But for the most part, satisfied. And the correlation, perhaps not surprisingly, was not very significant. So no events to attempt is not actually going to pick back the whole bunch of your satisfaction. And that's probably because of the indicators across the system. So the second level is this, cohesiveness of the community. So this is a metric that's used in the social sciences to look at how cohesive groups are. So people use it for things like how cohesive corporation is, how cohesive community is, that sort of thing. And it's a society scale that gets average and multiple index. Cohesion kind of refers to the sense of community, how cohesive the community is. Is there a sense of community? It's a question asked about, or it's a different question, essentially. They all refer to what is being part of the practice. The mean again was average, and this actually did work. This is just a 12% correlation with activity level. I'll tell you, this is one of the might have just model this. Two kind of questions that you ask, right? So one of them, how many friends do you have that you met outside of the GPSA? Now, the word friend is kind of an ambiguous term, right? Because you have a lot of friends of business and it's a friend of acquaintance. And so we had a second question that we asked, not just about a close friend who is just working out. And actually, as you can see, there's like a huge variation when you ask simple words, acquaintance, or casual. I guess some of these both are close and acquaintances. We ask about the generic category, which is a much smaller, because we just tightened in what we were asking about close friends. And so the correlation there was actually pretty high, so 30%, and about 50% with close friends. As I'll mention later on, a lot of this, depends on the event. So you look at different kinds of events, I'm not going to show you what the broad depth of the event, but certain events at the bar drive these results. So certain events are far larger than that. I want to end with some questions and suggestions. The first question, of course, is most of correlation to normalization. The theory will be that people that had proclivity for friends to make friends just happened to lose events. The activity was abolished, somehow they were found to be friends. That's plausible. Possible that the level of cohesiveness that people form their own groups or they form their own parties and maybe something to do in the absence of seemingly decoupled services. So that's certainly a real design of the reason why design not allow us to answer that question. So yeah, the yellow one is the particular events drive the results. One very substantial event is the bar, and it's probably one of the most contributing factors to a lot of the events. So kind of an overall point that I wanted to make is it's important to think in terms of metrics like these instead of politics. You know, we're now getting financial resources from other graduate students. This is some people it's a no-brainer, but it's really an important point. This data is possible to collect. So when I was a council member, the data was simply not available. And part of the impetus for the survey was, you know, let's get to actually make reasonable decisions and, you know, non-arbitrary decisions in terms of funding. Which brings me to the next point. You know, one question you need to ask yourself would be allocating the student activity fee for the next fund. And so one question you need to really consider is, you know, baseline questions such as, you know, as a committee does not make any recommendations, all we do is present data. It's not our job to tell you where you're going to go, but the job as far as part of the location committee and part of all of you. We're simply presenting this in case you make more important decisions. But one thing that's worth thinking about is the question of baselines, you know, so what's an acceptable attendance rate? What are you really trying to do? What is acceptable fee for a particular service that you want to do? I mean, these are sorts of questions that are for the words of a big example. Finally, I hope you see the value of this kind of enterprise and that the survey committee continues in the future. Perhaps it's not be something that's done every year, perhaps every couple of years. Keep track of this sort of thing over time and allocate funds based on the fluctuation of the data that you need to track. We'll probably be putting more things online with more details to come later. There's sort of a supplemental analysis. People have provided sort of qualitative comments. And,
it's like negative 2 minutes.
So I've been told to keep this really brief, and I revise it quickly. But there'll be more data that we'll put online. One of the highlights that some committee members, Chris, has coded the comments. We'll put those online. And also, we'll put some analysis, we'll actually put the models, statistical models that look at the variables and factors that predict some of these factors. For example, what quickly gets students and one answer is kind of what should be on children.
If there are questions, I wonder if you might save them and talk to Mike after the meeting. We're on something of a tight timeline, and for that I apologize. Unless there is a burning, burning question. Didn't see any. Sorry, too slow.
My simple question is where is the information that's available now? Where is it posted already, or where can we find the information? Like from the survey, is it already available online?
You should have been emailed the preliminary report. I'll email it again. That's the stuff that's already available.
We can send it out.
We'll send
the
it
whole,
out
again. If you guys want the preliminary report, and we'll get it up on CornellGPSA.com as more stuff comes in. Cool.
Wonderful. Thanks very much, Mike. The next item on the agenda is Resolution 3. Like I say, we're running a little bit behind schedule. My hope is that there isn't any need for further discussion of this. We presented it last week. It's been circulated in advance. The resolution should have been emailed out to you. Does anybody want me to put it on the PowerPoint? It basically changes discussion meeting and business meeting into the equivalent parts in the new meeting structure. There's no substantive change. It's just a clarification of the timeline. So without objection, I'd like to move directly to a vote on this issue. Is there any objection to skipping debate? Not seeing any. We'll now move directly to a vote on Resolution 3, the amendments to the byline funding procedures and criteria. For those in favor, please raise your green placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Those opposed? 0. With a vote of 17 to 0, the Resolution 3 is approved. Thank you very much. Now I'll recognize Steve Ahn for a presentation on the Cornell NYC Tech Campus proposal, but first I have to eject Mike Skeen.
Okay, so this is a map of San Francisco, Silicon Valley, my hometown. For a number of great reasons, meaning the weather and a couple of really great universities with technology focuses, this area has become sort of a hotbed for tons of really successful technology companies. I'm sure you're all familiar with a lot of these companies. And so Mayor Bloomberg of New York City kind of looked at this position like, hey, why isn't New York City like Silicon Valley, right? We have a lot of, you know, we used to be like an economic hotspot, probably still are, a lot of, you know, all the new people want to go to New York City. Why don't we have this, you know, sort of really exciting, hip startup culture in New York City? So he thought, well, it's probably because we're lacking sort of the technology side, right? We have a city, it's got a lot of people in it, it's really cool, but we're lacking people in the with computer skills and entrepreneurial spirit, and for whatever reason, they're just not coming over here. So maybe we need to attract them by just having a more strong technical academic presence in New York, and what's there already just isn't quite cutting it. So in order to rectify this problem and you know, get out of his mayorship with pretty good results, he decides to hold a contest. And he recently put out this call for proposals, basically saying, all right, New York, we have a bunch of land, we've got a lot of money that we want to give to various schools, and whoever wins this contest is going to get a chance to basically put their little embassy in New York City, and then hopefully that'll just seed and spawn tons of startups, all sorts of exciting economic development, right? So this happened about a month ago, and so far the two schools that have been really public about this are Stanford and Cornell. And so we're basically up against sort of this really giant gorilla of a powerhouse in terms of entrepreneurship and all that stuff. But, you know, we are clearly have a lot of advantages over Stanford, mainly geography. We have a really good chance at actually getting this. I'm being super quick about this. So, okay, what is sort of the vision of this specifically? It's going to be mostly focused on graduate and research, namely technical stuff, right? Like computers, information technology, cell phones, and all these kind of things. And this is mainly just because that's what Mayor Bloomberg is kind of, that's what he wants right now, right? So he put out his proposal, he wants startups. This is what we're sort of selling him at this point, right? But, and in terms of specifics, this is going to be, you might get students and faculty doing like 1 or 2 years. Some might even do all 5 years. They're going to hire new faculty just for this campus. And, of course, a lot of faculty are going to be going back and forth between Ithaca and the New York City campus. So the idea is that this isn't going to be like a separate thing. There's going to be a lot of collaboration and intermixing between the two campuses. And we have some experience with that with the Weill Medical College, which is also on in Manhattan. Entrepreneurship, that's the great focus of this all, right? That's what Mayor Bloomberg wants. So obviously the Johnson Business School is also going to be heavily involved in this. And like I said before, for the short term, we're just trying to sell this image that we're going to get entrepreneurship. But in the long term, Provost Fox really wants this just to be an extension of Cornell. So you can imagine in the future, it's not just going to be IT and computer science and all that stuff. It could well be humanities, right? Maybe as a humanities student and you want to study art and culture, maybe you'll do it a year in New York City. And these are all real long-term possibilities. And so because this is such a huge project, there's going to be a lot of financial risk involved in this, right? This is going to be, the numbers are kind of staggering. I don't remember them. If I did, I remember them. Couldn't tell them to you. But they're like, you know, millions and billions and words like that. So this is something we really need to think long and hard about, and if we don't feel comfortable, then maybe we shouldn't do it, right? Provost Fox is assuming that everyone is going to be for it, and he asked the faculty senate, he presented, and there were some concerns. So as a result, we, because this is going to be a graduate-focused thing, we also need to, you know, take a real good look at this and see what we think about it. Give suggestions, comments, concerns, and if you really like it, maybe you have some ideas of how you can promote this, right? How can you help Cornell beat out Stanford in this bid for this huge contest? So if you're interested, just check out cornell.edu/NYC. You know, they pay someone a lot of money to design a really fancy website, so you should check it out. It'd be a shame if you didn't check it out. And I think the GPSA role is, so the GPSA has already acted. They've already passed this resolution saying we love this idea, it's great. Undergrads are going to be able to spend like a summer or a year or a semester or so here. They made a video, it's really cheesy, but it's really professional. So yeah, like I said, we need to give some feedback. And finally, I think next meeting we're going to start putting together a formal proposal of whether we support this or not. Maybe we think it's a really bad idea, right? So if you have thoughts on this, please let me know. Steven on SSA38, or post a comment on the Facebook page, on the post itself. And that's it. Okay.
So the next item on our agenda is actually our breakout sessions. And this is one of the topics for the breakout session. So I think a good way to continue to engage Steve and to ask him any questions we might have is to perhaps walk yourself over to the physical sciences breakout session where Steve will be holding court.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I guess so.
Or would you rather do questions now?
Questions now.
There.
Fine.
I got a question. Do you know, are they thinking at all about how this interacts with existing Cornell Cooperative Extension that might be in New York City?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or with existing facilities like the architectural planning facility that's already there?
Oh, that's cool. The idea is that eventually, yeah, it all sort of just come and merge together into one central thing.
So that could be viewed as right.
Yeah, exactly, right? And we have the Wild Medical College there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't know about the architecture thing, but yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yes,
what's the timeline for
it? So, yeah, the applications, they're going to make a decision by the end of this year. So they're going to be moving pretty fast. And they're going to start actually making concrete movements maybe as soon as next year, right? But in the long term, this is like a 30-plus year project, right? It's going to be a huge part of Cornell, so yeah, it's not a small thing.
But is it us providing support for the resolution that happens to be fast?
I think the proposal is due to New York City October 28th. And it's confidential until then, but October 28th, it all becomes public.
Right.
So I think it's sort of up to us how we think of our engagement as being most effective. It's difficult, as Steve says, before that 28th because we don't have all the details, but of course we can start to shape the proposal. After the 28th, the proposal's already submitted, so even though we have the details. Nighthawk.
And Ken Fox is really open to feedback from us, so he wants to hear everything. Nighthawk.
One thing that that the permit for the GPSA think about that the governance, the shared governance structure of the school is supposed that it would be sort of not a separate unit like Wild Medical College is, but rather that their graduate students would be part of the GPSA. And so it's similar to the sort of relationship that we have with the Geneva campus, where it's a separate campus. But they're still represented by this organization as part of that. And so going forward, not that there could be, you know, sort of subdivision of the activity or something, you know, to get the most appropriate, but, you know, thinking about that model of shared governance and your comment,
we have 25 minutes left on the agenda and only 15 minutes left on the clock. The chair would entertain a motion to extend the meeting for 10 minutes, 7:10. Anybody willing to make such a motion? Nighthawk moves, seconded by Yevgeny. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The meeting is extended until 7:10. There was another question over here for Steve.
We have one department, but we have professors at one school, at one campus, and over here, and everything interacts, it's very difficult. We have polycom meeting with each other. We have issues with the grass, especially feeling like in the horticulture on that period committee that they aren't part of horticulture and culture because they're up in Geneva and they're never allowed in together. And so, I mean, it's definitely a concern. It would be nice to say we have campus in New York City, but, you know, an hour to Geneva is a pain, and 4 hours to campus in New York City is a pain too. So it might, it is going to have problems. It's going to present problems if you have grad students in that New York City, and then especially if you're talking about the grad student activity, you think, I can't use enough cinema, I can't use it, but barn wine, I can't use it, I'll continue to do that. So.
Thank you. Unless there's a further question for Steve, I would propose that we move now to our breakout sessions. We'll break out by division, so humanities, bio-sci, physical sci, social sci, professional schools. Caucus as you will. Like I say, I imagine there's a lot of stuff here. I imagine the physical sciences, maybe other groups, will be focusing on the NYC proposal. Feel free to caucus with them if you're interested in that. The first question is from Rebecca. Brainstorm a list of issues. And the third one is trying to address some of this vacancy issue that we have in committees. So if you have questions, ask your voting reps, ask me. So we'll take about 20 minutes for this, and then we'll come back for a quick 3-minute open forum at the end. Make sure to appoint someone to take notes in your group, and then we'll circulate those notes over the mailing list.
Social sciences.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.